Welcome back to After Hours. Jay Binkley, JT Noah producing the operation. Matty Mullen, Kansas City Chiefs, sitting in here with us as well as he typically does this time of year because, well, I kind of like the draft.
What's up, Jay?
What's up with you?
How
are
we doing?
Who's going to be the Jalen Carter? Who's going to be that guy that slips to pick nine and everybody's regretting it? Because I said that at the time, too. I said people are going to be regretting because of the character concerns, the name of the podcast, about Jalen Carter. How you doing, my friend? You ready for the draft now? Because the Chiefs keep you going until almost damn draft time.
I love it, though. I mean, that's the thing. It's a lot of fun when you win the Super Bowl, obviously, and you just keep going. When you lose the Super Bowl, it's obviously a bummer.
Yep.
And I was in mourning for about a week. And then after that, it's all about how do we get back? And it begins with the draft. I love the team building aspect of it all and finding the guys that will get you back there. And it reminds me of 2020 and 2021, two seasons that ended in disappointment.
Yep.
That was a long time ago, mm-hmm. if you think about it. But
kind of disappointment, but we would have taken it for many years.
Exactly. But in the context of this run, those are disappointing. But what happened? The 2022 draft class happened, and the 2021 draft class happened, and those propelled us to two Super Bowl championships and getting back last year. So let's just do that again.
Well, it's like a couple years ago, you know, you think of seventh round picks, and are they throwaways? Some teams they are. It's a dartboard. Hey, let's get this guy in here so he didn't sign with anybody else. But when it was Nassir Johnson who contributed, when it's Jalen Watson who's starter quality, and when it's Isaiah Pacheco in the seventh round, you weren't exactly throwing those picks away.
Well, that's why it's funny when you mention like how we're going to find the next Jalen Carter who's going to slide. I'm also interested in who's going to be the player on day two or day three that ends up being a major contributor at some point and helps us win the Super Bowl because Brett Veach, that's where he makes his money.
I think it's getting tougher and tougher. And the combine is not what it used to be.
Mm.
So many guys are bowing out of the 40 or the vertical or the broad. They used to do them all. But it's hard to find a guy doing them all. Like some guys will run it, but typically it's the guys that are mid-round guys that want to kind of showcase themselves as being better than what they are. But you might have noticed it. But at the combine, a lot of guys are bowing out of it. And they'll say, hey, we're doing our pro day, which is fine. But the problem is some of these pro days are on the same day. So now you're stretching out your staff and guys are having to go to pro days. I think it's going to change the combines. And Jim Nagy was running the Senior Bowl and he used to do a great job of it. And he talked about, you know, rounds 5, 6, and 7 are getting pretty lean.
Yeah.
His name, image, and likeness is kicking in and guys are staying in school rather than probably going to the NFL a year early, to be honest with you. But now Jim Nagy left there and now he's going to Oklahoma to be their general manager. So things change. But it is interesting, the draft, but I do think it kind of hurts the evaluation process when guys, yeah, the interviews are great. They obviously learned a lot from Xavier last year with his interviews. He had a great 40 time, but he's, as I always bring up, he did lead Texas in yards and receptions for three straight years. In two of those 3 years, he led in touchdowns, which means he wasn't a one-trick pony like people assume.
Sure, and you mentioned the NIL stuff. What kind of drives me crazy in the evaluation process is how everyone's been to like three or four different schools now. So it's not just, hey, you went to a program.
Like Nick Scorn, oh, he's better at Purdue, which he was. He led the Big Ten in sacks, and the production went down at A&M. But still, what do you look at? Are you going back to Purdue film, or are you going to
A&M? Exactly. Level of competition changes everywhere they go. Now, on one end, it's great for the player. So I'm glad that the players are making money and it's the best situation for them.
But especially in terms quarterbacks,
of,
man.
For sure. But in terms of the development, I mean, I'm kind of old school in the way where I used to like how a guy earns his playing time at the same program. You kind of, you know, get better and better over the course of your career there. We still see that. It's just kind of a different process now.
They just hit the next thing smoking, go into places that you think you got a chance to go play at. And unfortunately, sometimes it can hurt a program in what you do.
Oh, it sure can, yeah.
And then, like Perbula, the quarterback for Penn State, was actually instrumental in their comeback against Wisconsin this year, but he didn't play in the playoffs, even though that team was in the playoffs, because he transferred to Mizzou. But he had a choice to make, because he wasn't going to play with Drew Aller at Penn State, so he had to make a decision to go play, and so he transferred to Mizzou. And his coach understood that completely, but he was stuck, because do you go play the playoffs, or do you go play where you're going to have playing time next year?
Yeah, it's so tricky. It's the part that
which they need to change that window there.
Yeah, I agree. One funny part of that, though, that Mitch and I always joke around about is that wherever you finish your career forever, that's where you're going to say you're from, like on the NBC opener and everything. And you might have spent your whole career at Purdue, for example.
Now, I have heard guys mention like two or three places.
Yeah, which I guess they're starting to get around to it. But I mean, Nick Scorton will always say Texas A&M.
Texas A&M.
Like, kind of, but I mean, you also played at Purdue.
He was also been one AFC scout says he reminds him of George Karloftis.
Yeah, I saw that. That's not bad.
Yeah, Lance Zierlein also said Trey Hendrickson was his player.
I'd take that.
Which was extremely high praise.
What I like about Skorton is that in this draft and really recently in a lot of the recent drafts, we've seen a lot of these long, lean, lighter pass rushers, which is fine. I like some of them. But Skorton has the size, right, where he can play inside or outside.
Oh, he looks good getting off the bus.
Yeah, exactly. And Steve Spagnuolo loves that. What's funny about Skorton, you see at A&M, he was listed at 285, but then the combine, he was 257.
Like 30 pounds.
Yeah, like 30 pounds. How'd he do that?
Guys do it. They do weird things. Usually see it like at the academies, like Air Force Academy. Those pilots have like 6 months to drop that weight,
yeah,
or whatever. You don't see that very often, but he does live behind the line of scrimmage a lot, which is something like he sets the edge.
Yeah, he sure does.
It's a guy you don't have to take out. It's a guy that can play all the downs at defensive end. And Andy Reid's mentioned, you know, you can't have enough good pass rushers, and it's certainly a direction they might go. I just felt that 31, it's not as cut and dry, I don't think. At receivers. Now, if Luther Burden starts sliding, that becomes real interesting to me.
Yeah,
it does. That becomes crazy interesting to me. Mecca Igbuka, like him at Ohio State, not as much as Jeremiah Smith. It was a true freshman this last year.
He could come out right now, couldn't he?
But Veach doesn't draft Ohio State guys. You always have to put that in the back of your mind. I don't know why he doesn't do it. He just doesn't do it.
Well, there are like a million Ohio State guys in this draft.
I know.
And I'll give you another one. How about Jack Sawyer?
I like Jack Sawyer.
Jack Sawyer is the kind of player where if he's on your team, he's your favorite player. And if he's on the other team, you can't stand him, you know? And one of my buddies at work is a huge Michigan Wolverines fan.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I can't stand Jack Sawyer.
Well, he was the guy that started the fight when the Michigan tried to plant a flag.
Yeah. But like, if you're an Ohio State fan, I'm sure you love him.
Yeah. And,
I mean, he was good. I got some numbers for him here.
That return was awesome.
Pressures last year. Yeah. Well, you know, he's a big game player, which kind of sounds like coach.
I thought it was the first round the year before, but go ahead.
Yeah, but a big game player who in big games in the college football playoff, when he's playing Michigan, he steps up and he plays well. And I mean, good against the run, got pressure on 17% of his pass rush snaps last year. I don't know. He's the kind of player that's probably going to be there on day two. And I mean, he could make some sense, could join this pass rush.
The one thing about Jack Sawyer, the edge out of Ohio State, he came back last year. He didn't have to. He could have gone to the draft the year before and probably could have been drafted right around the same time, if not earlier.
Yeah.
He was looked upon maybe as a seven edges taken in the first round a year ago. But Jack Sawyer got on a group text with like his friends that played at Ohio State, said, "Hey man, you guys got to make it one more. We got to run this back one more."
It worked.
He was really instrumental in getting a lot of guys from State to not hit the portal and or the NFL draft and come back for unfinished business. So I respect stuff like that. It is an intangible. It is a character type of thing.
Yeah.
But it does show how much a guy loves football.
You don't have character concerns about
No character
Jack
concerns
Sawyer.
About Jack Sawyer.
But yeah, it's nuts looking at Ohio State. Just all the guys coming out of that program right now.
But I don't know what you do at 31. You know, Derek Harmon's a guy I really like at Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, a lot of early mocks probably would have had him hovering 31 and or early in the second round. But clearly the combine changed that.
Yeah.
You know, you're now looking at 20, 21, 25 at the latest, maybe, and I don't think he goes that late. He could, but I could see him going earlier than that. But if Skorton, I do believe, would still be available there at 31. Now, if Luther Burden happened to slide, it would make you have decisions because some consider him the second best receiver in this class. Going into this year, I considered the best, but Miguel Millen kind of took that role, well, you know, away from him. But Golden is obviously getting a lot of run because of his 40 time. But Luther Burden, I understand his production went down this year, but dude's special, man.
What do you think has happened to Burden? Because if you asked anyone a year ago, it'd be like, yeah, he's a top 15 pick.
No.
And now he's going to be sliding out of the first round. Do you think it's just because of the production last year?
I think a lot of it went to the production.
And Brady Cook was playing like on one leg with one arm half the season.
But his first year was interesting to me. Or no, even the second year. It seemed like he got hurt a lot. Like, he'd be fine, but you'd be... All right, what happened to him? What happened to Burden? Why is he out of the game? But Matt Miller, who covers the NFL draft, obviously this is what he had to say about Luther Burden sliding.
No, I think those people are all crazy. I don't know what they're watching. And I say that jokingly because I work with two guys who've done that recently, and I love them. But I don't see it happening. And maybe I'm crazy. I actually think we should draft guys who are good at playing football. And for the past 3 years, that's been Luther Burden. And then everybody's like, oh, well, we don't know how fast he is. So what does he do? He goes to the combine and he reminds you how fast he is. And it's like, okay, I know that he's kind of an introvert. He's kind of a quiet guy. That kind of maybe rubs some people the wrong way. But, like, this dude's 21 years old, and he's been dominant every time you've given him the football. He has NFL size. He's 6 foot, 206 pounds. He ran a 4.41. He did the position drills, unlike a lot of the other receivers. I don't get it. I have no idea. I've talked to Coach Drinkwitz about it. They're like, neither of us can figure it out. So I'm led to believe it's just, I don't know. I don't know if people just have only watched a handful of games from 2024, and that's who they think he is. But I think he's the best receiver in the draft. So if he's there at 31, it's the easiest decision in football.
So there's a guy that knows a little bit about the draft.
Wow. I mean,
Matt Miller likes Luther Burden. He's talked to his coach. I don't know why he's fallen. But it is a special talent. I don't introvert a wide receiver. I don't care about that as much. I mean, Marvin Harrison's a lot like that in Arizona, introverted. Quarterback, I don't feel you can be. I feel you need to be extroverted to be a quarterback. Wide receiver, I don't care as much.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And, you know, this whole conversation revolves around one thing. It's that the Chiefs are, I think, in a position to take the best player available. So in years past, I think about 2021, maybe before they traded for Orlando Brown Jr., everyone's saying they have to take a tackle, right? And I think maybe before the Jalen Moore signing this offseason, a lot of people were saying they have to take a tackle.
It was with Cosme and Eichenberg and Leatherwood and all the, and Tevin Jenkins, guys that didn't
end up it wouldn't have worked
tackle.
Out, right?
It wouldn't have.
But I think the Chiefs are in a position right now where they can truly take the best player available because of what they've done in the offseason so far. And that's a luxury that a lot of teams don't always have, but maybe if Luther Burden does fall, you weren't planning on that. You can think about it now, and maybe if you hadn't made some of the moves they've made in the offseason, you'd have to go a different direction. That's a good position to be in.
Because I knew, no, they made moves bringing in Juju and Kareem Hunt. Here's the thing. If they made the moves, I don't think it guarantees anybody's safety.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think it does. I think it's going to be open competition. I do. And if guys, Elijah Mitchell comes in at running back, and it's interesting. People look at the running back room and thinking about different things they could do. He ran a 4.33, by the way, at his pro day. The
guy, yeah.
I think you had that in 4.38 at the combine. If he can stay healthy. But I don't think it changes the fact that if a Dylan Sampson's out there, who's the offensive player of the year in the SEC, that they wouldn't do that because he can block, he can catch, he can do a lot of different things. I can't say that they wouldn't do that with running back. Even though they signed somebody, they could walk away. Smart teams do that.
I think Brett Veach would say that his job is to create competition at every position. And a good example of that is 2021. A lot of people forget the Chiefs signed Kyle Long to play right guard. And I think Kyle would have been pretty good, but he got hurt in OTAs. Well, the Chiefs drafted Trey Smith.
Yep.
There was no room for Trey Smith at the time. Well, it worked out pretty well, didn't it?
So I remember the first day of the training camp that they actually began after the rookies. And we had Mitch Holtis on.
Yeah.
And he stopped by the tent there. He said, where do you think Trey Smith's going to be? And he said, I expect him to be a starter. And sure enough, Trey Smith was the starter for this team.
And one of the best guards in the NFL now. I mean, you draft players not thinking, hey, we already have a guy there. You draft players saying, let's create competition at every single spot. And the best players rise to the top. And that's why this team has been so good over the last several years. You just keep drafting, keep throwing numbers at positions, and it usually works out.
I remember I went to the Big 12 media days a handful of years ago, and I remember Bill Snyder was up there talking. He happened to have his whole offensive line back. And people were asking, all the starting experience coming back, that'd be a good thing. And I remember someone asking Bill Snyder about that question, you get your whole line coming back. And he's like, yeah, that's good and all, I guess, but I like competition.
Yeah.
And I want guys not to feel safe in their job. And it made a lot of sense. I mean, you can see why Bill Snyder's had the success that he did with that kind of attitude. Mac Mullen of the Kansas City Chiefs in here with us. We'll take a timeout. We come back, though. We'll still talk some defensive line, of course, but I do want to talk a personal Chiefs question with you next.
Good stuff, brother. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, it's perfect.
Welcome back. Jay Binkley, JT Noah producing the operation. Matt McMullen of the Kansas City Chiefs sitting in here now. Adam Schefter had a tweet the other day talking about the closest to the draft we've been without first-round picks changing hands.
Yeah.
The 93 was the most recent. That was the Chiefs in Joe Montana.
Really?
That's been a while. You expecting a quiet draft? I mean, look at the depth in this draft. It's a little bit different than years before. How many guys do they have? I don't think Beach has said. Has he said how many first-round grades they have? Because typically he will say that sometimes.
I don't think
he'll
has
say 15
yet.
To 20 or something.
I don't think he has yet. He'll have his pre-draft presser about a week beforehand. he'll probably tell us. Brett's very forthcoming, which I appreciate. He'll just tell people what they want to know.
No, he is. And a lot of guys use it as a smokescreen. Yeah. But there's usually some nugget every year from Veach. Mm-hmm. Just like the year he drafted Pacheco. He says, I think that might be a seventh rounder or an undrafted free agent who could go for 1,000 yards in the NFL. About like that. Or the second or third round of the hot zones. Mm-hmm. Where he got Nick Bolton.
The pockets. Always talks about the pockets.
Yeah, so there is a modicum of truth. I mean, you gotta do play it careful. And the top 30 visits that teams have come in, a lot of times it's not the first rounders, because that's a question that's always asked. Hey, the Chiefs ever contact you? And a lot of times it's like, no. They didn't talk. But the fifth round, sixth round, seventh round, a lot of those guys are actually the ones that come so they can kind of, you know, see him a little bit.
Or if you have further questions about a guy. Like sometimes they do their research on a guy. They talk to coaches. They watch him at the combine, at the pro day, and they're like, we feel good about him. We know everything we need to know. When they have the top 30 visits, they probably have a question. They want something answered. They have more things they're trying to figure out. So those visits, when they're reported, are helpful, but they don't always tell the full story.
Don't tell the full story of who you're getting. I know Xavier Worthy is one of those guys that kind of blew him away at the combine with the interview.
Yeah, well, I mean, Xavier Worthy, I remember when he first got drafted, something that Brett talked about was that generally when a rookie comes in, they're kind of be pigeonholed into a small role and kind of bring him along slowly. Well, really from OTAs, Coach Reed and Brett were both saying that Xavier was ready for everything right away. He wanted as much as he possibly could handle. And it's funny the way it worked out where they really needed him right away, where Hollywood gets hurt, lost for three quarters of the season, Rashee gets hurt in week four, and Xavier became the guy almost right away. And I like to look at that Buffalo game as kind of the middle point of his career already, where he kind of elevated his play after that game, or every single game after that Buffalo game. He was reliable. He was consistent. He was contributing. And, you know, we were talking off air a minute ago about how we never actually got to see Rashee, Hollywood, and Xavier together. We were so excited about that in camp because they were electric. Yeah, and now we finally get to see it. So I'm glad Hollywood's back too.
Yeah, and Rashee does a lot of the dirty work that Kelce will do, like across the middle and stuff like that. There's a lot of that you see out of him.
Rashee was about to have a monster season, like an incredible season, because everyone was trying to double up Kelce and trying to prevent that deep speed from Xavier, and they would have been doing it for Hollywood as well. And Rashee, it's almost like an extension of the running game, the way they were using him, just quick crossers over the middle. You know, it would have been an awesome season for him, but luckily he'll be back, and sounds like all his rehab's going well, so happy about that.
Wasn't it a Fulton interception with the Chargers that led to the injury?
Unfortunately, yeah. So that's the way it all works out, is now Christian Fulton is a Chief, and hopefully he can make up for that one this year with maybe some big plays.
But everybody is doing the thing now. They're picking the Chargers to win the division. I've seen a lot of the Chargers. Every year, Chiefs have won it nine straight times.
Isn't that crazy?
I haven't seen as much straight Broncos. Times. People are still hesitant on the Raiders to some extent because you haven't seen even though Pete Carroll's going to do some great things, I think, with Vegas. But the Chargers, once again, they haven't really made that splash either. You know, J.K. Dobbins still sitting out there. I mean, they really haven't made that splash. Joey Bosa's gone from that team. So it's interesting what you think about it. The Chiefs definitely don't care who everybody picks. I think they kind of like it, to be honest with you.
I understand that Harbaugh's really kind of elevated the culture there, and that the Chargers are good. I mean, Justin Herbert is good. They're going to be good. I know that. It's always difficult to win the AFC West. That's just the first goal, though, for the Chiefs every single year. When Patrick Mahomes and the guys are back in a couple months for phase one of the offseason training program, they'll talk about that. The first goal is winning the AFC West. They'll be the first to say that winning it 9 years in a row doesn't matter at all going into this year. It's a new challenge, but they're fired up about it and they're excited about it. What an amazing opportunity in front of the Chiefs to maybe win this division 10 years in a row. They're not going to give it to us, but it's right there.
I think last year might've been the most impressive. And the reason I say that, four teams from the AFC West made the playoffs. So people say what they want about four teams, all but the Raiders made the playoffs.
I think for me, 2021 is still the sweetest one because they start 3-4 and the Chargers beat us in week three of that year. And it was a struggle for much of the first half of the season. People kind of forget about that, but the Chiefs still won the division.
23 was kind of like that too. They were 9-6 on Christmas.
Yeah.
After that Raiders game.
Isn't it funny though to think, like, if I told you 15 years ago, like 9-6 would be struggling? Pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah, I would have taken it. I went 50 years without.
Yeah.
I mean, I was born after the Super Bowl four that they won. I was born after that.
Had to wait for it, but
I am old, and it was, took forever. And there was the 93 season, the 94 playoff game with the Bills.
Yeah.
They finally made the AFC title game. These have all been at home.
Yeah.
Except for one.
But hey, I mean, all of us paid our dues, right? And here we are.
Yeah, you're here, and everybody's like trying to be the next Chiefs to this point.
Chiefs are still here, you know?
How long did it take you to get over it? Because I know that, you know, in this town, everybody gets together for the Super Bowl now. It used to be getting together and watching the Patriots, because that's kind of what you had to do every year. It's now watching the Chiefs. The Eagles were on a different plot. The Eagles are playing so well in the NFC. Everybody was talking about Detroit and everything. I was like, yeah, I don't know, man. The Eagles might be the team to beat, and they turned out to be the team to beat in what they did. But I'm kind of like you. I'm usually an NFL Network junkie, and any kind of NFL information you can consume. It drives me nuts, though. It drove me nuts. Like, they did start driving me nuts towards the end of the year. But it was unbearable the week after the Super Bowl. Oh, it's over. They still made the game.
Yeah, I had to disconnect for a little bit. Not that I stopped thinking about the Chiefs, because I love the Chiefs, but yeah, I kind of disconnected from a lot of the discourse, because if you really think about it, let's see, the Chiefs went 15-2 last year.
Yeah. And one of those was a throwaway.
Okay. So that's, 15 regular season games for Mahomes, and then two playoff games that he won. So 17.
He's got 16 or 17 playoff wins.
17, which so is second most all time.
Yeah, second most, because he's just passed Montana.
So
at 16, yeah.
So math 17. In my head, he started 18 games last year, and the Chiefs won 16 of them.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, one of them was a Super Bowl, but the other one, being the Buffalo loss, he then beat them when it counted. So that's the thing with last season. Like, it's a bummer. I mean, it hurt me just like it hurt everyone, but I don't want to forget how special last season was just because of how it ended, because it was an incredible season full of resiliency for the team to get back to that moment. They still made history. No team until that had ever won back-to-back Super Bowls and made it back to the Super Bowl for a third straight year.
Had
the Chiefs
a chance
did
to
that.
Three-peat, yeah.
They were there. It was a bad night to have a bad night. That's what it boils down to. And the way the Eagles played that night, I'm not sure anyone beats them in that particular game on that night, just the way it goes. And the Chiefs have been on the other side of that, you know? That's why one thing I kept thinking about after the game, the reason winning the Super Bowl is so awesome is because losing it really hurts. And we've been there and won the Super Bowl in my lifetime three times. And that's pretty cool. And really, the loss, all it made me think about was, I want to feel that feeling again. And we've got the people in place to get us back there.
Yeah, I remember all the talk after the Buccaneers Super Bowl loss. You know, everybody was, some of the players were talking about how that, can you call a season a success or not?
Yeah.
And it was amazing. A lot of the players that, because beforehand, it would have been a success making it, but that mindset is what you want.
Sure.
You want that mindset. No, we didn't win at all. New England got that way, you know, with the players and stuff. If they went and they didn't win, it wasn't a successful season.
Well, when you taste success like that and you reach the mountaintop, it's going to be difficult to say anything is a success unless you win the whole thing. I think it's not always black and white where, yeah, we didn't win the whole thing. Still a heck of a year. Still incredible resiliency shown by our guys over the course of the year. And they poured so much into it to get back to that moment. And I respect that. And I'm going to remember that and cherish that. Just stinks how it ended. And I think we can all agree that, you know, ending was what we wanted. Yeah.
I'll never forget. It's still my favorite quote ever. Brett Veach after the Super Bowl 57 parade when they beat the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
He holds up Lombardi and says, this is what a rebuild looks like.
And how awesome was that, huh?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just the way it goes. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the players in Philadelphia, guys like Brandon Graham, guys like Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, they remember what it felt like to lose. And, you know, the good part of this for the Chiefs, they're going to remember what it felt like to lose, and it'll motivate them to get back there. I know that because I know
these guys.
Mahomes
got a haircut.
There is no one who is more competitive and more fired up to get after next season than Patrick Mahomes. I think we can all agree on that. And I remember in the week leading up to the Super Bowl, he was asked about if there's any game in his career that he still thinks about, and he immediately answered the Buccaneers Super Bowl. Well, these are the two games he's always going to think about and that are going to motivate him for the rest of his career. And that's a good thing if you're a Chiefs fan, because that guy, who I think is the greatest quarterback of all time, that is my opinion, I just think he is, if he's motivated even more, even 1% more, it's bad news for the rest of the NFL.
Bad news for the rest of the NFL. We'll talk about some of these draft picks as well, and the free agency, where the Chiefs need to go. Did the free agents solve answers for the Kansas City Chiefs? Matt McMullen in studio. We'll get to that stuff next. Beck After Hours. Jay Binkley, JT Noah producing the operation. Matt McMullen in studio with us talking draft. Here's a question from the 816. Speaking of the draft, do you guys think we're going to draft a running back? If so, what round? Also, do you guys think we can break the Pats record of conference titles? I would love to hear your opinions. Patriots are 11 straight AFC East titles. Chiefs are sitting at 9 AFC West. Do I think they can beat the record? Yes, I think that they can beat that record.
I think Patrick Mahomes is 29 years old, and as long as he's our quarterback,
he's lost, one
good shot.
Road game in the division, one?
Yeah, yeah. That's right. It would have been the Bronco game when he was sick, right?
Or was it the game where he got hurt, the Raiders game?
Lost to the Broncos in Denver.
No, he's never lost in Vegas.
Never lost in Vegas.
So it was the Broncos. They've lost twice, two of those.
And never lost at SoFi, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, never lost at SoFi, never lost in Vegas. Lost one game against the Broncos, and that was the game that broke the streak. It was like a cold, snowy day, and pretty sure he was sick.
Andy Reid is 13-2 in his last 15 games against the Raiders. 10-2 in his last 12 against the Chargers. Went 19-3 in the last 22. And, of course, 17-2 in the last 19 against the Broncos.
And like I said earlier, it's difficult every year. I mean, you don't go into the season saying we've won the division a bunch of years in a row, so we're going to win it again. Like, the players will be the first to say that. It's difficult every single
year. Can't throw your helmet out.
No, you're getting their best shot. But the Chiefs, they prepare for divisional games during OTAs, which I think is the coolest thing. I don't know how many teams do that. They prepare for these games in a couple of months. And maybe that preparation will help them 6 months from then, which is pretty cool. So they're thinking about it during OTAs. That's why they've been so good in these divisional games late. Of course, it's talent and all that, but also because of a mindset. So, of course, they can do it. I think they can do it. They got to go out there and compete.
And the second question, do you think they'll draft a running back? My answer to that is yes.
This running back class is really good.
And I think it could happen as early as the third round, to be honest with you.
That's what's interesting is if you do like a mock draft simulator, if you take a running back like on day two, then day three rolls around, there's still some really good running backs there. So, I mean, I think you let the board follow you. And again, I think Veach has done a great job through free agency of setting this team up to take the best player available at whatever position for every single one of their picks. And whether that be day two or day three, if there's a really good running back there, particularly a guy that can maybe handle like some third down duties, it makes some sense because you got to replace Samaje Perine. And that's difficult. Right now, maybe he's on the roster, I don't know, but a third down back who can help in pass protection, who can catch passes, and maybe has some juice as well could be a welcome sight.
Perine was underrated last year with his role. The guy's a tremendous receiver. When the Broncos cut him, Veach, it was a quick deal to come to Kansas City. By the way, unfortunately, he's with the Bengals again.
Yeah, he's back in Cincinnati. I get it. That's where he spent most of his career, but he's kind of the prototypical third down back. Obviously, he had some big catches for this team, but look at the Charger game that we won at home. His pass protection against Derwin James, you know, the play I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
James is coming right up the middle, and Perine is, like, right there between him and stops James, and Mahomes completes the pass. The Chiefs win that game. You got to find a guy who can do that, and I do think there's some guys who can do that in this draft. Like, there's a lot of exciting running backs who can do a bunch of different things.
Well, Dylan Sampson is the guy I took in the mock. In the third round out of Tennessee, was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year. Close to 1,500 yards rushing. Guy's a stud. Didn't run at the combine. Didn't run at the pro day. One of those guys that didn't run. But I don't care so much about running backs in their 40 times, to be quite honest with you. But he's a three-down back. So you can have him in there on third down. You can have him on first and second. You don't have to be predictive when you take him in or out of the game, though. They're going to pass, or they're going to run. He's the type of guy you can kind of leave in there.
Sure, and that could make some sense. You know who I love, though?
Who?
Scataboo. I love Scataboo, man.
Reed would have a lot of fun with Cam Scataboo.
Yeah, you would. I mean, I have some numbers for him here that I wrote down. So only Ashton Jeanty had more rushing yards than Scataboo. He had 103 force missed tackles last year. You watch his game against Iowa State. He's just so slippery, just bouncing off everybody. He caught 52 passes for over 500 yards last year, so he'd be a screen machine.
And he was like this 1AA too at Sacramento State.
Yeah, I just he's the kind of player I think Chiefs Kingdom would fall in love with immediately.
Because I think Jeanty will be gone. Hampton, I think two running backs go in the first round, those two.
Yeah.
Caleb Johnson of Iowa is interesting because he's so big.
Yeah, could make some sense, sure.
Dylan Sampson, though, I really like. ran that 4.35. That's supposedly what he can run. I don't know, man. I like Keyshawn Judkins again, the Ohio State thing. But these guys, him and Henderson, can really do a lot of things out of the backfield.
Do you like Henderson or Judkins more?
You know, I learned to like Henderson more, but I like Judkins a lot at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
I liked him better at Ole Miss than I did at Ohio State because I think they utilized him more than Kiffin did, but I would probably go Keyshawn.
Yeah, I like Henderson a lot. I was looking at the combine breakdowns, and who knows if this means anything, but Henderson's combine profile almost identically matches that of Chase Brown. And adding a player like Chase Brown to the Chiefs offense could be pretty cool. Just the kind of the explosion and the juice that Brown added to the Bengals offense late in the year. Like they tried doing it with Zach Moss. It didn't work. They made Chase Brown their every down back, and obviously their offense benefited. So I like Henderson a lot. I like them all, though.
Yeah, Dylan Sampson, as I mentioned, didn't run at the combine, but he hit 22 and 23 miles per hour.
Yeah, he's fast.
On the GPS trackers at the pro day. The Tennessee's had their pro day. He ran 4.46 and 4.49 ranges for it. Again, I don't care as much about that, but Skedaboo's fun to watch, man. The guy was just...
He's just fun, like bouncing off guys.
I can see Andy Reid having a ton of plays for him.
Skedaboo would throw a touchdown. He would catch a touchdown, rush for a touchdown. He would do it all.
You know, another guy that reminds me of is Tyler Warren. We won't stand a chance, I don't think, to get him. The tight end from Penn State, former quarterback. They used him a lot, even in trick plays. They haven't played the quarterback position or the center, but he did a lot of things for Penn State. This guy's going to be a problem.
Kind of amazing how the tight end position has changed over the last 10 years. And I think our guy, Travis Kelce, is a big reason why, because teams finally realize they can use their tight ends in so many different ways. And just how college kids are such athletic freaks now. What are his measurables? I mean, I'm sure he's almost an offensive lineman though, but he can run 4.5 or something. It's crazy.
Skedaboo is
not Skedaboo. Oh, I'm talking about Warren.
Tyler Warren?
Yeah.
Oh, it's 6'6". I think Tyler Warren's pretty large. I think, let's see what he's listed at. Let's see his draft profile. This is official draft measurings.
Okay.
What he was listed at. But I think he's a Brock Bowers type of incident peg. 6'5 and a half is what he went. Instead of 6'6", 6'5 and a half, 256.
And what's he run? Does it say?
I don't think he ran at the combine. No, I don't. He didn't run.
I'm sure it's pretty good. Shouldn't make sense. Humans shouldn't be able to do that.
He's a little banged up too, I think, is why he ventured out of running that. But Tyler Warren's a difference maker, like Brock Bowers is.
Yeah, well, we saw what Bowers did for the Raiders last year. I mean, and again, I think Travis Kelce has a lot to do with the fact that Brock Bowers exists and Tyler Warren exists, because you just didn't see players like that 10 years ago.
Yeah, we'll go to tight end this year, and inevitably they will, because that's where they gain this valuable information. But as far as the signings the Chiefs got,
yeah.
How much does Jalen Moore kind of change, you think, the left tackle position? Are they content with that, or do they think they can get – because, by the way, he was a fifth-round pick.
Yeah.
So they can technically get somebody on day three, someone to fill on a line, be guard, be tackle, do a lot of different things. Does that change at all their game plan, do you think?
Well, I think what it does is it gives the Chiefs options. I don't think you have to take a tackle in round one, I think nationally the perception was. I think Jalen Moore is going to have an opportunity to win that spot. He has to go out there and earn it and play well in OTAs and in camp. But I'm excited about it, because one thing I talked about with Mitch on our podcast is when you're looking for a blue chip left tackle, it's difficult when you're a team like the Chiefs, because there's two ways to get one. You can be really bad and pick in the top 10. That's not an option for the Chiefs. Or you can get lucky and have, the best left tackle in the league hit free agency and you pay him a bunch of money. Well, that's also not the case. Well, how do you find a market inefficiency, right? How do you find that great left tackle without going one of those two ways? Well, maybe it's because Trent Williams is in San Francisco and his backup is pretty dang good and played really well when Trent Williams was hurt. But he's blocked there. He's not going to have a future there because Trent Williams is there. So you give him an opportunity here in Kansas City. And that's what we're going to have here. And I think Jalen, when he had the chance last year in 5 starts, played really well at left tackle. Just build on that now, continue that here in Kansas City, and he'll have every opportunity to do it.
Yeah, he graded out extremely well, Pro Football Focus, when he was out there getting his starts. But what about the other positions? Like Mitchell at running back coming in here is a very, cost-efficient deal. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a prove-it deal. What can you still got? He missed last year, But what about moves like that kind of under the radar? Because they've been very good at those type of moves.
Well, it reminds me of Jerick McKinnon. Now, they're kind of different body types, but in terms of the journey, it's really similar, where McKinnon was really good early in his career with Minnesota, went to San Francisco, got hurt, couldn't stay healthy. The Chiefs took a flyer on him. And do we win as much as we won without Jerick McKinnon? I don't know. I mean, McKinnon made enormous plays for this team during his career, got the Chiefs and the two Lombardi trophies. So Elijah Mitchell, I'm not saying he's going to be Jerick McKinnon, but the Chiefs have been really good at this, where you identify a player like Mitchell, who was really good early in his career, and he was, as a rookie, had over 1,000 yards from scrimmage, had a bunch of injury concerns since then, but he's still young, and he still wants to play, still has some juice, I think, and you bring him in here and see what he can do, and that's what makes OTAs and training camp fun. You can kind of figure out, what does a guy like Elijah Mitchell have left? There's no downside. No downside at all.
He's very fast.
Yeah, he's fast, but also kind of more powerful than you would think. He could break tackles with the Niners. So, yeah, I'm excited about it. I don't know what he'll bring, but we'll find out.
And as far as receivers, they bring Juju back and Kareem Hunt back at the running back position. Again, I think these are guys that they like, obviously. They know the system. But I think it's going to be guys that will be competing for roster spots.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just a given because they gave him money.
No, it's all about competition. And, you know, bringing Hollywood Brown back is a big deal, I think. I'm a big Hollywood fan. I think when he came back to this offense late in the year, particularly against Houston and Pittsburgh, I think he changed everything. So like we talked about earlier, I think the prospect of having him, Rasheed, and Xavier together is very exciting. Christian Fulton is a move I'm very excited about because he adds a whole dynamic to the defense where he gives Steve Spagnuolo way more options. Fulton is an outside corner and a good one. So now you pair him with Jaylen Watson, who can also play outside, obviously. Maybe Trent McDuffie plays more in the slot, where he was really good 2 years ago and was all pro. Maybe Chamari Connor plays more of a traditional safety role. I don't know. We'll see what Spags does. But that's exciting when you have a player like that that you can move around the defense.
Because Connor did play a lot of slot, also blitzed a lot when he was in college as well. But I think McDuffie will go back to that slot. He'll primarily be in that slot, I think.
In nickel,
it's where he feels comfortable.
And I think Trent was awesome.
But he's good at everything
last year. Yeah.
But he's extremely, extremely good at that.
I mean, he's one of the best corners in the NFL, and he's extremely versatile. When you have a player like Fulton, just gives, again, Spags more options. And I think we kind of saw last year that when Jaylen Watson got hurt, the defense struggled at times. Well, now you add a player like Fulton, it just kind of increases the depth of the entire unit. So defense was already really good last year, and they got better adding Fulton.
And you have a Jaylen Watson, who was a seventh-round pick.
Yep.
So
yep.
Those do better. Chiefs have three of them, including Mr. Irrelevant, which I hope they don't get rid of that pick because that is an awesome pick to have. More with Matt McMillan next. We'll look at the Chiefs and what kind of damage will they do at the NFL draft this year. Welcome back, 96.5 The Fan. Jay Binkley, JT Noah producing the operation. Matt McMillan in studio with us as we look forward to the NFL draft. Kansas City Royals, if you're a Royals fan, 9 more minutes. Royals and the Giants, spring training baseball.
In 9 minutes?
Are you excited about Major League Baseball? You've been on these trips. You went to Germany with the Chiefs. You go everywhere with them. But 5 a.m., you've been waking up and watching the Dodgers and Cubs at 5 a.m. in Japan?
So I was actually joking around with my wife about this. So I originally wanted to work in baseball. I did internships with the Twins, with the Diamondbacks, with a couple minor league baseball teams. I love baseball, and I used to be so like tuned in and locked into baseball, but football has kind of taken over that part of my brain now. So if you ask me 10 years ago, the answer would have been, yeah, I'm locked into the Dodgers in Tokyo, but I have not woken up to watch the Tokyo series. I've just kind of followed up what happened online after.
A lot of people didn't realize it started like a couple days ago. It was on Fox, so at least it was the main channel of people like watching the news or whatever. My mom got caught up in that because she was like, hey, there's a baseball game on. She usually watches them in the morning.
Yeah.
On Fox 4, the news. I was like, there's baseball on still. And then today they were on Fox Sports 1.
Okay.
Listen, I'm a geek, and it's one of my main channels I'll flip to and whatever, see what's on.
Sure.
But there's not a ton on, you know, during the week or whatever on Fox Sports 1. But I was imagining how many people actually, like, went to that channel at 5 o'clock in the morning and realized the baseball game was there.
And had no idea before they turned it on.
And they're going to come back and play spring training games still.
Yeah. Are these games just exhibition games?
No, they're real.
These count.
These are real.
Okay.
Ohtani went to yard in a controversial home run, but Ohtani, which is big for them that Ohtani is
playing. Yeah, he had to. I'm sure there was a lot of pressure on him to.
It's a Saki pitching and everything, so yeah.
I think Ohtani is awesome. I thought when Ohtani first came over, I thought it was ridiculous to think that he could hit and pitch. Like, this is, there's no way, no one's ever really done that. And the fact that he is arguably the best hitter and pitcher in baseball, I think is insane. Like, we're watching this. They're going to talk about this in 100 years.
Well, I think people don't realize Mahomes was drafted by the Tigers.
That's right. That's, I'm glad he picked football, though.
Remember that they bring up that no-hitter he threw against Michael Kopech of, you know, Major League star Michael Kopech. Mahomes faced him in high school at White House and no-hitting.
Isn't that crazy?
No-hit that team.
Who are the guys that are just like accountants or lawyers now or whatever, and they played in that game, you know?
Oh, I'm sure a ton of them. They're probably in his crew.
Yeah.
He probably still hangs with them. He seems like that kind of guy.
Do you remember when there was like the Little League game with like Joey Gallo and Clayton Kershaw?
Well, that Vegas team had everybody because they had Gallo and Harper and everything.
Harper, yeah. It's just nuts. I mean, I'm sure, like I was saying, there's like just some totally normal dudes who were playing with those guys.
Well, I know your answer on this, but Bob and Dusty, it was Dusty's question today with Matt because Bob's out of town, but they asked, who would you rather be, Mahomes or Bobby Witt? And oh, I mean, they're both handsomely paid, no question about it. They're both superstars in their sport, but to me, it was a no-brainer. I'll take the guy already with three rings. I mean, that's... Listen, Bobby's incredible. Man, he's already a made guy, man. He's got three, even if he doesn't play another snap, which he will because he's 29, but he's got three rings and three Super Bowl MVPs. It's tough to have a resume like that.
I think both guys are living right. I think Bobby, hopefully, this is the Royals fan in me talking. I hope Bobby has a couple of rings when it's all said and done.
I hope too. So. But he can go around too. And not a ton of people would know who he is. They're going to know Mahomes.
No, they certainly will. I mean, it's hard to say you wouldn't want to be the Super Bowl winning quarterback.
But
it's pretty cool.
You actually go to the movies and things like that. Just put a hat on, pull it down, put the shades on. Bobby Witt, do things. Mahomes can't.
That's the thing. Mahomes, it's basically the deal that you make is you are not a normal person anymore. You are a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
And he
now
trimmed his hair.
He did. I think people will still recognize him, though.
I think they still will. Matt, always great to have you. We'll talk draft again with you at some point. JT Noah, Jason and I, thank you guys very much for producing the operation. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of nights. Good night.